You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. Good morning, happy Wednesday, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin. If you don't know by now, Earl Ingram has a brand new show called What's Going On. It's a program where he has long-form conversations with people from all over the community in and around Milwaukee to talk about how they contribute to making it better for all of us who live there. Whether it's education, history, local government, or your health, Earl is here for the good discussions. And today that discussion has to do with the prison system, before, during, and after. Earl spoke with Mark Rice from a group called Wisdom, which is a statewide network comprised mainly of faith-based organizations. And they began their work in Milwaukee almost 40 years ago.
So Mark, let's talk about what Wisdom is, because you represent Wisdom.
Yes, Wisdom is a network of organizations across Wisconsin that is fighting to advance racial and economic justice. We're known for our work around overhauling the criminal legal system in Wisconsin. We also work to advance immigrant rights, and we also have a campaign that is working to advance environmental justice in Wisconsin.
All right, Mark. Justice reinvestment campaign. What does that entail?
Yes, the Justice Reinvestment Campaign is a framework for all of the work that Wisdom is doing around what we call transformational justice. Justice Reinvestment has four main demands. Number one, we're calling for no new prisons to be built in the state of Wisconsin. Our second demand is to reduce the prison population in Wisconsin by half. And Wisconsin policymakers can do that by advancing common sense policies like expanding treatment alternatives to incarceration on the front end. They can reduce the prison population by giving people a fair chance to be released early on parole, by giving people a fair chance to have their sentences commuted. Governor Evers has a power to commute sentences. He has not utilized that power at all yet. He's done some pardons, which is rights restoration, but commutations would actually free people, liberate people from the Wisconsin state prison system. There's an earned release program that can be expanded for people who are currently incarcerated that would give people an opportunity to participate in programs and give them an opportunity to get out early. On the back end, as Vente was saying, Wisconsin is one of the worst states for reincarcerating people for convictionless rule violations. There's about 3,000 people going back to the state of Wisconsin prison system each year for revocation with no new offense, have not had any new conviction, have allegedly violated some sort of rule of supervision, and are being sent back for that. So that's a huge proportion of the population now. There's about 5,000 people back in for revocation with no new conviction. So certainly a significant proportion of the population is there. So we're calling on policymakers to end that policy of sending people back with no new conviction. And then that frees up resources. So we're also calling, the third piece is closing down prisons. We're starting by demanding that Green Bay Correctional Institution be closed down. Also, we're calling for Waupun Correctional Institution to be closed down. And for many years, we've been calling for Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, MSDF in Milwaukee, to be closed down. Three of the most inhumane prisons in the state. And all of that, after we decarcerate and close prisons, that frees up a lot of resources that then can be redirected back into communities that have been most harmed by incarceration. We're talking specifically about Black and Brown and Indigenous communities, poor communities across the state. We can then take those resources, invest in jobs, healthcare, public education.
So Mark, you've covered just a lot of ground, and so very quickly, and I want to go back to the first thing that came out of your mouth. And that's people being reincarcerated with no new convictions. Let's break that down a little bit so people can kind of understand. So if I've been incarcerated and I'm now free and I didn't follow something that maybe I didn't show up, maybe I didn't do this, I can be reincarcerated because I didn't follow some rule and I haven't committed an additional anything that I've been convicted of. Is that what we're talking about here?
Correct. Mass supervision drives mass incarceration in Wisconsin. So after a person gets out of prison, a person is on extended supervision. Previously, there was people sentenced under the old law who may still be under parole. There's a system of probation too. So that people under probation, extended supervision, or parole. And there's a number of rules that people have to follow while they're under that form of supervision. And I have one example in my own personal experience where I've been diagnosed with a disabling mental condition, and I was having a mental health crisis while I was under supervision in the city of Milwaukee. I was arrested for disorderly conduct. Milwaukee police officers arrested me and took me to jail a few days later. And the judge, public defender, and the prosecutor all agreed the behavior was not criminal, was not disorderly conduct. They agreed that it was a mental health crisis. The judge dismissed the case, but then my probation officer in Milwaukee, who had no specialized training in mental health issues, decided to move forward with the revocation process. And I was facing 12 years of reincarceration for that. The Department of Corrections forced me to spend 6 months in Milwaukee's Care Detention Facility while I was fighting that revocation process. And eventually I was able to go home. The judge gave me time served, but many people aren't that fortunate. The average amount of time people are serving for that is 18 months back in prison.
If you'd like to find out more about Wisdom, go to wisdomwisconsin.org. And if you'd like to find out more about Earl and his show, stick around because in the 8 o'clock hour, Pat's going to be welcoming Brittany Merlot with the weather, as well as Earl Ingram to talk about stories from Milwaukee, as well as his new podcast. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to WAUKradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 6:59.
Listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. When it comes to sports, you know me, I can talk about the Brewers all the time, but I will admit, not the biggest football fan, but that's okay. You are, and that's great for you, and I love that for you. So that's why I turn to Mike Clemens. He is one of our sports reporters here at Civic Media, and along with Chad Holmes and Jimmy Cuska, they cover everything in Wisconsin, whether it's high school, college, or professional. And today, Mike sits down with Don Rosen to talk about the huge news coming out of the Packers on their big trade announcement, as well as the Badgers, who started their new season just this past week.
They've made a franchise historic trade. So the Dallas Cowboys have had this drama going on since last spring where Micah Parsons, who's probably the best pass rusher since Reggie White, you know, over 12 sacks a year for 4 years in a row, the last guy to have that was number 92, Reggie White. And Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, thought he had a deal with this guy in March. He was at the end of his four-year rookie contract. And then the player came back and said, nah, I want more. And then this thing is dragged out all summer. Now, Jerry Jones tends to like to have this kind of drama. He doesn't mind the publicity. But at the end of the day, they gave up. And they sort of had a split about a week or two ago. And the Packers, at 4 o'clock, I was in a press conference with Mark Murphy, the Packers CEO and president, who retired a month ago, who was about to be inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame. And it was the banquet last night. $300 a plate raises funds for the Packers, you know, museum and their Hall of Fame. And so he, you know, we're talking about his career, and all of a sudden one of the guys from behind the cameras is looking at his phone and says, Mark, there's a report that the Packers have traded for Micah Parsons. And he knows that this is just would be a huge, huge deal. Like, and he said, he smiled and kind of giggled, and he said, are you sure? He said, I'm not going to comment that till it's confirmed. He goes, that sounds like AI to me. And then a few minutes later, a reporter who he really respects, a business reporter for the Press Gazette, said, no, Mark, now the Press Gazette is confirming that the trade is happening. Micah Parsons is coming to the Packers. And he said, what did Dallas get for him? You know? So, in other words, this guy has been out of the building just a month, had no clue. No clue. And to me, I thought, Don, you know, the new guy, Ed Policy, is this the way things are going to be now? I mean, does the new president go into Goodigan and say, you go get this Micah Parsons, I don't care what it takes? Even though, you know, Ted Thompson might have said, no, you don't give up two first-round draft picks, and you don't give this guy $188 million, making him the highest-paid player in the history of the NFL that's not a quarterback, with $136 million guaranteed. No. And you don't give up Kenny Clark, one of your veterans, one of your leaders, to Dallas to make this deal happen. Yeah, that's the haul that the Packers gave up yesterday, and it's bizarre. It's not like them, and it's going to be very curious to see how this all plays out.
Now, with football starting, NFL starting, let's talk about Jordan Love and his thumb.
Yeah, Jordan was playing in that preseason game, first one against the Jets 2-3 weeks ago on a Saturday night. And on this last play, he got sacked. His hand got, his left hand, not his throwing hand, got banged on a helmet. So I asked him this yesterday because he went out to practice on Monday to sort of test it out. I said, so before you decided to go with the surgery, was it the pain why you made that decision? He said, no, the stability. It just, you know, it was just kind of flopping around there.
Oh,
and that's
no.
when the doctor said, yeah, if we go in there and we fix it now, we think you could heal in time to be ready for week one against the Lions. So he agreed to that. What we did learn yesterday is that this brace that you've seen him wear, this black brace on his left hand, he's going to be wearing that now for the first couple of games of the season, which, you know, changes how he plays. Like, he'll only be able to use his right hand to hand off the football. I don't know if he's going to be able to take snaps under center because, you know, you put your throwing hand up on top of the center, and then you put your left hand underneath it to catch it. I don't know if he's going to be able to take snaps from center by next week. We'll find that out. But that's, you know, that's going to change how he plays and uses his hands for the first couple of weeks of the season.
Wisconsin Badgers had some good news and some bad news. The good news is they won. The bad news is their quarterback.
Yeah, Billy Edwards Jr., who they brought in from Maryland, a big kid with a pretty big arm. Now, the game starts out last night against the Miami of Ohio Redhawks, and I thought the Badgers' offense looked a little out of sync. It was their first game, but, you know, he didn't complete his handoffs on play action. He kind of was out of rhythm with his receivers. And then after a handoff in the second quarter, he's running over the logo. The big Wisconsin logo in the middle of the field at Camp Randall Stadium last night, and his left knee buckles, which is, it's got a brace on it from an injury he had during their fall camp, and he limps off the field and goes into the locker room, comes back out in his clothes. So he's got some kind of a leg injury. Luke Fickell would not go into the details about it. More testing today, probably. So for the third year in a row, Luke Fickell loses his starting quarterback. Tanner Mordecai had a broken hand, and then last year it was Van Dyke who had a torn ACL. So this Danny O'Neill, another kid that they brought in, I thought he looked pretty good. He's a little bit smaller than him, not as quite as big of an arm, but he moved the offense and ran for a touchdown too. They also, on defense, they got a safety named Zachman, Preston Zachman. He had two interceptions, two legit interceptions last night. And so the Badgers won 17-0, all pretty much defense, but they've still got a long ways to go to get that offense in sync, and now they're going to have to do it with their backup quarterback.
If you want to listen to that conversation with Don Rosen and Mike Clemens, you can always tune into the Don Rosen Show. Mike stops by every Friday to go over everything sports as well as tell some great stories. But again, WRJN, every single Friday on the Don Rosen Show, Mike Clemens is Don's guest. If you want to catch up with your favorite Civic Media show, go to civicmedia.us/shows, find the one you're looking for, download episodes directly to your device, and listen to them anywhere, anytime you'd like. Again, that's civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29. Listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. Hello again. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. We've spent a lot of time talking about the road to the governor's mansion in 2026, which happens next fall, but there's also another race on that ballot, and that is for lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, and one person has already thrown their hat into the ring, that being Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. She talked about why she wants to run for lieutenant governor and also discussed what she would bring to the position based on her current experience as Secretary of State. But before she gets to that, she wants to tell you a story, her story, and how she came to a life in public service in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, like they say, there's sometimes no straight line to where you go. And I feel like for me, that's exactly true, Greg. I mean, I was a political nobody from Western Wisconsin. And, you know, my kind of entree, I guess you could say, into politics was Scott Walker, you know, that guy. It was not just about, you know, I'm the product of a union family. My parents were public school teachers, but it was more about some of the things he was doing behind the scenes. And so at the time I was helping folks with access to capital, and I realized the amount of money Silicon Valley was getting in one day is what Wisconsin was getting in an entire year. And I'm like, this is wrong, because we run on Main Street, not on Wall Street. And so I reached out to the state treasurer, because state treasurers across the country were doing more to empower their Main Street, and didn't call me back, And I come to find out it's because Scott Walker was trying to get rid of the state treasurer's office, Greg, because who needs checks and balances in government? Let's just get rid of the chief financial officer. And that just seemed really suspicious to me. And so I started asking folks, is there anything we're going to do about it? They're like, Sarah, there's nothing you can do. The governor and the legislature has made their decision. They're going to get rid of this office. And I found myself leading the bipartisan committee to save our fiscal watchdog. And despite everybody saying there was no way we could do it, we won with a vote no with a majority.
Well, and that's, you know, that we were talking about this earlier with Pat Kreitlow. It just seems like why do you want to get rid of those things? You know, as you said, like getting rid of the treasurer, that's getting rid of your accountant. Why would I want to get rid of the person who is going to keep, who wants to make sure that we're spending our money correctly and taking in money? And while it doesn't make sense, it makes complete sense if we're talking about the Scott Walker administration. Well, I mean, and that's an important aspect of the story too, is like, you come from Western Wisconsin, you come from folks who work for a living, you understand what it's like to, you know, look at the checkbook and go, okay, well, we can afford this for groceries, and we can afford this for the school clothes, and we can afford this for the car, and budgeting and making sure that we are spending correctly and just being fiscal and truly fiscally responsible, not how that phrase is sometimes weaponized. But yeah, I mean, and that's a great story too, because it's like, you, someone said, no, you can't do that. And you said, challenge accepted.
Right. Great. And I think, and that's exactly what happened too. So then when we won to save the position, the question was, well, who's going to run for this office, Greg? And I was like, I don't know if this is anything I could do. I've never run for political office. My parents aren't political. They're public school teachers. Yeah. My parents talk about politics around the dinner table, but it wasn't necessarily like an active part of my life. And I remember I was talking to my grandma when I was thinking about this, and she's like, Sarah, don't ask for permission. Just ask for forgiveness and do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I threw my name in as a political nobody from Western Wisconsin. And yet in 2018, I flipped 9 Trump counties. despite everybody telling me that there was just no way that this, you know, rookie could do something like that.
Well, and that's something, too, that's I feel like a very interesting point of conversation. You know, the national elections always say one thing, but as we've seen in the last two elections that, you know, for Susan Crawford and Janet Protasiewicz, Wisconsin says something very differently. And it's about we care about our laws. We care about our rules. We care about the people. And I think while you may think yourself at the time a political nobody, you're a Wisconsin somebody, and that makes your voice valid in what needs to be said and listened to. So it makes me happy. I mean, I'm a political science person. I'm a campaign person. So I love hearing these stories. And you chose lieutenant governor. You want to run for lieutenant governor. What is for you in the campaigning? What do you see envisioning for the office for yourself? And what are you hearing on the campaign trail as you travel throughout the state?
Well, I think there's a few things. For starters, as a fifth generation Wisconsinite, Greg, from Western Wisconsin, I mean, the state has given me so much, but I want it to be even better for the next generation. I think about my son and I wonder, is he going to be able to swim in like the clean lakes and the clean rivers and like play in our public lands? I mean, is he going to be struggling to have 2 to 3 jobs just to stay ahead? I worry about our public schools and not just thinking about the next generation. When I've been traveling the state and I've been all over, I mean, this is something I hear over and over again. Like, folks are seeing a system where they are struggling to, like nurses I've been talking to, they're struggling to own homes in the neighborhood that they serve, but yet they're watching billionaires write off their second or third vacation house. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this system works for the wealthy and the powerful, but not for them.
Yeah.
And kind of looking at, these are complex issues, Greg. It's not going to be one person in this just like magical ideas. It's really a team of people that are going to be able to have to like roll up their sleeves and really solve these things. And that's, to me, why I want to run for lieutenant governor, is I want to be part of that leadership team that's going to be able to provide solutions to these issues that are keeping too many Wisconsinites up at night.
I can't say thanks enough to Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski for stopping by and having a great discussion. And if you want to listen to that entire interview, it's two parts. Go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for Matt and Air on Air and download it directly to your device so you can listen to it anytime, anywhere. It's just that simple. Again, civicmedia.us/shows. And you want to stick around because coming up right after the news is Brittany Merlot with the weather and Earl Ingram, who's going to be talking about his new podcast and all of his stories from Milwaukee. So stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. I truly hope you had a wonderful Labor Day this past week, and I hope you took time to remember why we have those things in place, those vacation days, because people, groups fought for them, especially here in Wisconsin. We have a very deep history of union activism in the state, and we must always keep that history alive because it affects us whether we know it or not. And to get a better understanding, I spoke with John Shelton, who is a professor and chair of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. He's also the president of AFT Wisconsin, and he stopped by to talk to me about his experience at Labor Fest this year, as well as what the unions are going to bring to the 2026 governor's race here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, so first of all, I spoke two different places yesterday here in Green Bay for Labor Day, and one of my themes was basically that politicians won't save us. So let's start with that. I mean, we have to organize ourselves, but obviously politics matter a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I guess this was over a month ago now, but when Governor Evers was kind of on the fence about running for a third term, right? And we weren't sure whether he was going to do it or not. I read a column that Senator Chris Larson from Milwaukee wrote for the Minocqua Brewing Company and the Substack there, which mm-hmm. is very well read, which which is very highly read in the state. And, you know, we just kind of started texting after, and I spent like way too much time because I was in Woodman's when we were texting, right? So if y'all know Woodman's,
place is huge.
I spent like 4 hours in Woodman's because I kept stopping to text Chris, and I finally got done. I was like, all right, let's talk. And we decided to, over a phone call, that what we should do is draft an open letter that no matter who ran in this election, there needed to be certain things that they did, whether it was Evers or somebody else. And so we brought in a number of other folks who were interested in this project, a lot of other labor union leaders. You know, Chris got some colleagues in the legislature. And, you know, the letter, which, you know, folks can find out there and they actually can still sign on to, basically said what we want from a candidate, anybody, whether it's Evers or somebody else in this election, is somebody who is going to be committed to certain things, obvious things like empowering labor unions, racial justice, reducing mass incarceration, having a clean environment, all those things. But to me, I think what I was really proudest of in terms of the letter is it said, whoever the next governor is needs to be somebody who's going to fight with progressive groups. My interest in this really comes from the labor movement, but obviously other progressive groups are involved as well. You know, Citizen Action signed on to this, for example. And, you know, that letter, I think, has become even more important as we now have an open primary, right? Because I'm not talking to a lot of candidates, and we've already got several great candidates who have declared, and there will be a lot more that will be announcing very soon. And, that's what we're looking for as a union, is to see who's going to show up and fight with us for the things that we need to make this state, frankly, the state that all working people deserve. So that was the impetus for the letter. Again, it's still out there. Folks can still sign on to it. And, you know, we're seeing this as obviously not the final word in terms of what, we expect out of candidates in this election, but, you know, kind of a starting point for that conversation and really a lodestone.
And you were speaking about, when we just started here, you were talking about the events you went to yesterday. What are the things you're hearing from folks out of those events, from various unions, from various walks of life, various parts of Wisconsin? What are the key things you hear, and what are the things that connect more than anything else as far as, you know, differing lives but shared experiences?
Yeah. So, you know, Green Bay, like a lot of places, has a labor event put on by the Green Bay Labor Council. It's not a parade as it is in a lot of other places, which was the sort of initial impetus for Labor Day, actually, was workers' parades in the late 19th century claiming public space. But we definitely claim public space, right? It's a big Labor Day picnic, and lots of locally elected officials are there, union folks are there. And then the second thing I did was later in the day, there was a protest, Workers Over Billionaires, that was organized by a number of different groups, but Indivisible was a part of organizing that, and I spoke there too. And you know, I think people are fired up this Labor Day, right? I mean, you know, you look at everything that's happened over the summer, and at the federal level, of course, that's you know, Trump and the Trump administration, you know, literally, you know, sort of gloating about taking away food from people and taking away healthcare from vulnerable folks. And of course, locking up our immigrant brothers and sisters in this, the most cruel way possible, and occupying American cities. And I don't know what that announcement's going to be about, but, you know, could very well be an announcement that, you know, Trump is mobilizing the National Guard in Chicago, right? Yeah. So, you know, and of course we don't love Chicago during football season, but we stand with Chicago if that happens, you know? And so I think people are feeling a real sense of like, what do we do about this? And so the things I kind of talked about, and really in both, obviously slightly different, tones for each event, but, you know, the thing I really emphasized is that we're not the first people in American history to have to fight for the things that we value. We have a very long history of workers and other groups organizing through militant action to fight for their rights. And this moment is no different. And it helps nourish us when we know that we have those groups who have come before us. And what I challenged everybody to do was to think about what they can do every day to fight authoritarianism. And it's going to look different for every person. And, you know, I really do believe that, you know, for folks who are in unions, we're very central in this fight. People have to build their unions. But, that people were very receptive to that message. They want to be doing something. You know, they want they want to take action every day to fight for our democracy and to fight against authoritarianism.
A big thanks to Professor John Shelton for stopping by and talking to us about the importance of unions here in Wisconsin and across the country. You can listen to that entire interview by going to civicmedia.us/shows, or listen tomorrow because I'm going to play another cut from that interview because it's a very, very important discussion. Stick around because after Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is me, Greg Bach, hosting Matt and Air on Air, and we've got Darren Von Ruden talking about farms, and we're discussing the new attack on mail-in voting, so stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. Have a wonderful Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 8:29.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.